Lamentations chapter 2, verses 1 to 2, 11 to 14, and 17 to 18. How the Lord has covered daughter Zion with the cloud of his anger. He has hurled down the splendour of Israel from heaven to earth. He has not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. Without pity, the Lord has swallowed up all the dwellings of Jacob. In his wrath, he has torn down the strongholds of daughter Judah. He has brought her kingdom and its princes down to the ground in dishonour. My eyes fail from weeping. I am in torment within. My heart is poured out on the ground because my people are destroyed, because children and infants faint in the streets of their city. They say to the mothers, "Where is bread and wine?" As they faint like the wounded in the streets of the city, as their lives ebb away in their mother's arms. What can I say for you? With what can I compare you, daughter Jerusalem? To what can I liken you that I may comfort you, virgin daughter Zion? Your wound is as deep as the sea. Who can heal you? The visions of your prophets were false and worthless. They did not expose your sin to ward off your captivity. The prophecies they gave you were false and misleading. The Lord has done what he has planned. He has fulfilled his word, which he decreed long ago. He has overthrown you without pity. He has let the enemy gloat over you. He has exalted the horn of your foes. The hearts of the people cry out to you, Lord. The walls of daughter Zion, let your tears flow like a river day and night. Give yourself no relief, your eyes no rest.
O Lord, think about this. Should you treat your own people this way? Should mothers eat their own children, those they once bounced on their knees? Should priests and prophets be killed within the Lord's temple? See them lying in the streets, young and old, boys and girls, killed by the swords of the enemy. You have killed them in your anger, slaughtering them without mercy. You have invited terrors from all around, as though you were calling them to a day of feasting. In the day of the Lord's anger, no one has escaped or survived. The enemy has killed all children whom I carried and raised.
You'll remember last week we did the intro to this tiny little book in the Old Testament, Lamentations. Just five chapters of poems, very cleverly written poems that are set just after the time that Jerusalem has been sacked by King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of the Babylonians. They came in and they took away the young. And actually, in this particular chapter, we see they took away all the good-looking people as well. They took everyone of any form of means to Babylon and left Jerusalem devastated with simply the poor and the most deprived there, with nothing, absolutely nothing, surrounded by devastation. And I wanted us to look at these five chapters as we go through Lent this year so that we can learn what it means to lament the things that have been lost to us in this last year, so that we can move on in a really healthy way into the coming months. And Monday's announcement by Boris has left us living in this time between times. We're living in the time where some people have got the vaccine and some people can begin to start doing more and more things. And eventually we look to June 21st, maybe as a time that we might be able to return back to normal. And so we're living in this time of expectation, which, let's face it, if anyone can do well, it should be us who follow Jesus, who are living in this time between times, between Jesus' ministry and death and resurrection and ascension and then his coming again. This time that we live in, that is lived in hope and expectation and longing for all that he has, and Lamentations helps us lean into some of those longings, which we're going to look at today. So the way we're going to do this morning, we're going to go through those verses that we looked at in chapter 2, and then we're going to pick out some of the things that the scriptures might be saying to us in two particular ways. But before we do that, what about a definition? What is lament anyway? Well, lament is a prayerful complaint. It's a response to the emotions of grief and of suffering. And grief comes in a whole bunch of different ways. I don't know if you've lost someone and gone through the grief of losing a loved one. You'll know that sometimes grief comes in silence. Sometimes grief comes in wailing and just not being able to deal with the emotions. Sometimes grief comes through explaining, just needing to talk it through with someone who's got the time to listen. Often grief and mourning comes with confusion, with all the questions of why and the what ifs that we're left with. And ultimately, grief brings a sense of helplessness, powerlessness. We can do nothing to change the circumstances that we are in. And we do normally associate grief with death. But I came across a definition as I was researching for this talk today, which I really like. It's from a website called griefrecoverymethod.com. I can't commend that website to you. I've not spent much time on it, but I love the definition I found there. It says this: grief is the conflicting feelings caused by the end of or a change in a familiar pattern of behavior. So it doesn't even really mention death, but it really mentions change. And as we've lived through this last year, we've all dealt with an awful lot of change. It's not surprising if you've experienced some grief around it, mourning what hasn't happened and what we haven't been allowed to do, left with the what ifs, sometimes just dazed in silence, feeling helpless or powerless. It's not surprising. Change brings conflicted feelings, and if we don't deal with those, they can come back and bite us in the bum later on. The effects of suppressed grief are irritability or anger, obsessing over what was lost, anxiety, addiction or self-harm, apathy or numbness. These are the potential mental health implications. But it can also have some physical impact. It can, in time, lead to headaches and ulcers if we don't deal with grief. And in conversation with some people, I've realized that there's some anxiety about us coming out of lockdown itself. Yes, there's the hope and the excitement that things are going back to normal, but as we come out of lockdown, we're going to lose the routines that have become normal to us in lockdown. Yes, it's exciting, but it's also a change. There's grief and there's mourning as things change. Lament teaches us to engage with these conflicted feelings that change or loss can bring. And it helps us voice the pain that others are feeling too, bringing our complaint or their complaint to the Lord. So whether we're grieving ourselves or whether we see pain, as we were praying earlier about the climate and seeing what's happening to the world around us, whether we're grieving on behalf of someone else or something else, we are bringing those things to the Lord with real honesty. And that's what I love about Lamentations. This is what I love about what we're going through this Lent, is encouraging each other to be really honest with the Lord. To not hold back with these polite prayers that we hope God might hear because we're being so eloquent. No, that's not what Lamentations is about. Lament is about a raw honesty. God, would you look? This is not okay. So let's jump in quickly to Lamentations chapter 2. I hope you've got a Bible. I've got an actual Bible because I'm reading my notes off my iPad, which I'd normally use. But from verses 1 to 10, we've got one of the characters that we introduced last week, the narrator. There's another character who comes in a little bit later called Lady Jerusalem. She spoke in chapter 1, speaking of her pain. The pain of Jerusalem represented as a female person. And the narrator as somebody who's seen the devastation. And in chapter 1, the narrator has been reporting, he's been saying how awful it has all been. And it carries on like that for the first 10 verses. How the Lord has covered daughter Zion with the clouds of his anger. He has hurled down the splendor of Israel from heaven to earth. He has not remembered his footstool in the day of his anger. He's simply reporting what has happened. But notice what happens in verse 11. All of a sudden, this guy who's been the reporter, a little bit like on the news reporter saying, yeah, there's been an earthquake here and I'm surrounded by rubble and devastation. I'm just going to try and talk to this person. You've lost your wife, you've lost your children and your dog's run away. That's how you're feeling right now, completely disengaged from what's going on. But by verse 11, the narrator breaks. He's moved with compassion. My eyes fail from weeping. I'm in torment within. My heart is poured out on the ground because my people are destroyed, because children and infants faint in the streets of the city. He's moved from being a reporter, slightly standoffish, able to see what's going on but not engaging himself, to being caught up with compassion and emotion and being moved because of what it is that he's seen. Verse 13, seeing devastation create the desire to bring some response. What can I say for you? What can I do to help? How do I deal with what it is that I can see? Because as Lady Jerusalem knows, and as the narrator themselves know, that some of what's come on Jerusalem is simply because of their sin. They're turning away from God. And we looked last week about, well, how do we respond to that in our day and age? But right here and right now in this scripture, Lady Jerusalem learning to take responsibility for some of what has happened and recognizing that God had brought a judgment that he had promised if Israel turned away from his laws, which they had done consistently. Now, there are other psalms that are really helpful for us when we just don't know why things are happening. So difficulties are not always a sign of God's judgment, but they do give us an opportunity to turn back to the Lord. Because at the end of verse 13, the narrator asks the question, who can heal you? And the answer is the God to whom later on in the chapter he encourages Jerusalem to pray to. That at the end of the scriptures, as we heard Katie read, she was reading the words of Lady Jerusalem crying out to God, which we'll get to in just a moment. So the Lord can turn it around, but he doesn't turn it around yet. And Lamentations is living in that time between times of this awfulness that's happened and what happens next, of God bringing restoration and hope. Verse 14 has a fascinating phrase. The vision of your prophets were false and worthless. They did not expose your sin. Now, a few weeks ago, Andre did a great job helping us think through the ministry of the prophet. And it says in 1 Corinthians 14, verse 3, that prophecy is for strengthening and for encouragement and for comfort. And it is those things, but prophecy will always encourage us and call us to greater holiness. And we'll be talking since September about this narrow path that Jesus calls us to walk, taking up our cross, denying ourselves and following him. And the role of the prophet is always to call us into greater holiness, greater denial of ourselves, that we might follow Jesus more fully. That's the role of the prophets, and they didn't do it. The people didn't listen. And so it's the role of the prophets, and I encourage us, those who are engaged in the prophetic, to call out what it is that we need to be doing as a church, to leave sin behind and pursue holiness, personally and corporately too. And towards then the end of the chapter, the narrator, this person, the reporter who's seen devastation and was moved with compassion to want to do something, engaging empathetically with what Lady Jerusalem has gone through, recognizing, yes, there's some responsibility that she needs to take, but points then to the Lord. Verse 18, the hearts of the people cry out to the Lord. You walls of daughter Zion, let your tears flow like a river, day and night. Give yourself no relief. Your eyes no rest. And in response to that, we get Lady Jerusalem then in a really honest three verses of prayers, 20, 21 and 22. Look, Lord, and consider. Who have you ever treated like this? Should women eat their offspring, the children they have cared for? Should priest and prophet be killed in the sanctuary of the Lord? Raw and honest and brutal. God, this is what's happening. Would you look and see? Lamenting is about allowing an emotional response, whether it's we're like Lady Jerusalem and we're suffering ourselves, or whether we're like the narrator and we've seen suffering and we've allowed ourselves to look enough so that we are moved with compassion, that the only response, whether we're observing it or experiencing it, is to come to God with our raw and honest prayers. God, this is not okay. That is lament. Paul writes in Galatians chapter 6, verse 2, that we should carry each other's burdens, and in this way you will fulfill the law of Christ. And as we mentioned before, this was when Kay was helping us think through the role of the pastor. The word compassion means to suffer alongside. The word passion means suffering. And the word com means along. So compassion means to suffer alongside someone else. The Lord has compassion on us, the scripture says. He comes alongside us and suffers with us. And he invites us to do the same for others, to carry one another's burdens, relating to one another as those who need to take responsibility for our actions, but have compassion in the midst of challenge and suffering. So like the narrator, we can love and support others by listening to them, by identifying their pain in their story, and by pointing them to the Lord as the one who can heal. So lamenting is about bringing our complaint, the rawness, the frustrations, the conflicted feelings that come from the change that we've experienced, as we pray honestly to God, either for ourselves or on behalf of someone else. Now, as we think about complaining, as we think about bringing our complaints to God, it's true that some people have taken complaint to an art form, and I have a letter that I'd like to read to you. It's a letter of complaint that I found on the Metro website, where you can read it in full and see the photos if you'd like to. It's written in 2008 by a man called Oliver Beale. It says, "Dear Mr. Branson, reference, Mumbai to Heathrow, 7th of December, 2008. I love the Virgin brand. I really do. which is why I continue to use it despite a series of unfortunate incidents over the last few years. This latest incident takes the biscuit. Ironically, by the end of the flight, I would have gladly paid over 1,000 rupees for a single biscuit following the culinary journey of hell I was subjected to at the hands of your corporation. Look at this, Richard. Just look at it. I imagine the same questions are racing through your brilliant mind as were racing through mine on that fateful day. What is this? Why have I been given it? What have I done to deserve this? And which one is the starter? Which one is the dessert? You don't get to a position like yours, Richard, with anything less than a generous sprinkling of observational power. So I know you will have spotted the tomato next to the two yellow shafts of sponge on the left. Yes, it's next to the sponge shaft without the green paste. That's got to be the clue, hasn't it? No sane person would serve a dessert with a tomato, would they? Well, answer me this, Richard. What sort of animal would serve a dessert with peas in? I know it looks like a bargee, but it's in custard, Richard. Custard. It must be the pudding. Well, you'll be fascinated to hear that it wasn't custard. It was a sour gel with a... I was hoping this wouldn't happen. It was a sour gel with a clear oil on top. Its only redeeming feature was that it managed to be so alien to my palate that it took away. So alien to my palate that it took away the taste of the curry emanating from our miscellaneous our miscellaneous central cuboid of beige matter. Perhaps the meal on the left might be the dessert after all. Anyway, this is all irrelevant at the moment. I was raised strictly but neatly by my parents, and if they knew I had started dessert before the main course, a sponge shaft would be the least of my worries. So let's peel back the tin foil on the main dish and see what's on offer. I'll try and explain how I felt. I'll try and explain how this felt. Imagine being a 12-year-old boy, Richard. Now imagine, it's sorry, come on. Now imagine it's Christmas morning and you're sat there with your final present to open. It's a big one. You know what it is. It's that Goodman's stereo you picked out in the catalogue and wrote to Santa about. Only you open the present and it's not in there. It's your hamster, Richard. It's your hamster in the box, and it's not breathing. Come on, Gareth. It's not breathing. That's how I felt when I peeled back the foil and saw this. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking it's more of that bargee custard. I admit I thought the same too, but no, it's mustard, Richard. Mustard in capital letters. More mustard than any man could consume in a month. On the left, we have a piece of broccoli and some peppers in a brown glue-like oil. And on the right... the chef had prepared some mashed potato. The potato masher had obviously broken. And so it was... and so it was decided that the next best thing would be... it was decided that the next best thing would be to pass the potatoes through the digestive tract of a bird. Once it was regurgitated, it was clearly then blended and mixed with a bit of mustard. Everybody likes a bit of mustard, Richard. I can't carry on. If you'd like to read the end of that letter, you can. I cried when I read it first, and I wasn't expecting to cry that much when I was reading it to you. As I said at the start, he finishes, I love your brand, I really do. It's just a shame that such a simple thing could bring it crashing to its knees and begging for sustenance. Yours sincerely, Oliver Beale. Thank you, Oliver, for bringing joy to my morning. I'm sorry for your suffering. The point of lament is complaint. We may not be able to take it to an art form like Oliver Beale, but we want to bring our complaints to the Lord and say, Lord, this is not okay. The narrator encourages Lady Jerusalem to let your tears flow like a river day and night. Give yourself no relief, your eyes no rest. Arise, cry out in the night. As the watches of the night begin, pour out your heart like water in the presence of the Lord. In Romans 8:23, Paul talks about creation groaning and the Spirit groaning within us along with creation. These groans like the groans of childbirth as a mother is waiting for the baby to come and the pains are racking her body because something new and something exciting is coming, but we're not there yet. We as followers of Jesus are living in this in-between time where we feel the pain of creation that we've just prayed for. We feel the pain of suffering of ourselves and others. And what is our response? Our response is to cry out to the Lord day and night, to groan with the Spirit, to allow him to pray in us and through us to the Lord for what we see around us. That's what the Lord is inviting us to do in response to the grief that we see around us and feel within us. Have we then, as God's people, poured out our hearts like water in the presence of the Lord? Have we given ourselves no relief, our eyes no rest? Have we let our hearts cry out to the Lord? Have you? Have you gotten face down on the floor and said, Lord, this is not okay? Groaning because you just run out of words. I don't know what to do, Lord. This is awful. Please. Have you been able to listen to other people's suffering and lament with them? Oh, I'm so sorry. That sounds awful. Allowing them simply to be. Lent is a time when we take on new disciplines to help us in our walk with Jesus. And here's my challenge, church, that we take time to pray. On a Monday evening at 7, we gather on Zoom. Let's use that time to lament, to bring our complaints, our requests, our this is not okay to God. I know we're busy. I know many of us have loads of Zoom calls already. I know that some of us got kids and it's pretty inconvenient. But the point with lament is you can't help but lament. Things move around the lament rather than lament fitting around other things. When you're experiencing grief and lamenting before the Lord, that's what comes first. And my challenge to us, church, is to put prayer first this Lent. It's why we've sent the prayer cards out. Three things to lament, three people to pray for who don't yet know Jesus. Let's allow ourselves to be moved by the Spirit this Lent. Let's allow ourselves to lament. Let's reorganize our diaries, change the kids' routine. Make sure that we've got enough time to have a half an hour Zoom call on a Monday evening because we want to prioritize prayer and lament in this season as we groan with the Spirit for the stuff that we grieve. And the stuff that we see around us, the suffering that's there in our world. God invites us to be honest, just like Lady Jerusalem in her prayers. Let's lament what has been lost. Lament how people are not turning to Jesus for healing. lament the climate emergency, lament global poverty, and so much more. From the personal to the global, let's join in with the groaning of the Spirit, the groaning of creation, and bring out honest prayers and requests to the Lord.